So it's really about figuring out who you are and accepting who you are, and then aspiring to be the better version of yourself. And it's not what other people want for you. It's about what you want for you.
All right, Dad. We have Sarah Walton here, founder and CEO of Betterment, a company that focuses on creating the next generation of courageous, compassionate, and confident leaders. Sarah, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about Betterment.
Yeah. So I spent 15 years in corporate America, sort of moving up the ladder, and between Target and Nike, so sort of two really awesome companies to be a part of. And at sort of during the pandemic, I think everybody sort of slowed down a little bit to like think about life differently. At least that was my experience. And I kind of looked around and I felt like work really sucked for most people. Like it wasn't something that was like sort of a meaningful contribution to your life. And even if you worked for an organization that was meaningful, like a nonprofit, it sort of just like didn't feel good. Like leaders weren't sort of engaged, and it wasn't like people don't have the right support system to move up in a company. Arrogance and egos kind of take over, and it becomes more about titles, less about sort of growth. And I kind of just, I had a pretty large team at the time, and I kind of found that people were struggling. So whether it was, you know, COVID and people were actually dying, or whether it was sort of trying to balance like kids climbing over you while you're trying to get your job done, reconciling the fact that other people were losing their jobs and sort of, you know, maybe your partner wasn't working anymore and the stress associated with that. And so I just sort of felt like there was just this like general weight on people. And I was like, well, I can have that impact here at Nike with the people that work for me, or I can go and try to help leaders across companies feel more confident and sort of make hard decisions and lead with, you know, sort of compassion. And then maybe work will suck less. And so it's such a huge part of our lives. So like if I could have any small impact on sort of making people a little bit more excited about their job, that feels like worth sort of getting after. And so I did what sort of few people have the sort of courage to do. And I just sort of quit my big paying high corporate job. And I was like starting at square one. And now sort of have grown a business and, you know, kind of full of clients and really focused on small business entrepreneurs and nonprofits, and sort of, again, like creating sort of a better leadership culture, a better culture, and helping people sort of like what they do again and feel like they're working on stuff that actually moves forward instead of sort of this like we're stuck between Slack and Zoom and sort of, you know, we've lost meaning and importance in our roles. So yeah, it's been about a year and a half since I left, and it's been amazing.
What was that journey like? I mean, leaving, tell you where you're at right now, like how long was it kind of ideation stage versus, okay, I'm going to hire my first employee to where you're at right now?
Yeah, so I'm kind of like an act fast, think later person. And so like I just sort of had this moment where I was like, I can't do this corporate thing. I can't stay on this trajectory that I'm on. It just doesn't feel meaningful anymore for me. And so then I started talking to people about it on Thursday. And then by Tuesday, I decided I was going to leave.
Love
and it. So it was like, yeah. So I was like, once I'm like off of something, I'm either all in or all out. There's nothing in between for me. And so I just was like, I know I have to do something, but I don't actually know what I'm doing. So I was running toward a concept and an idea and a mission for my life, but I wasn't running toward a established business or sort of a setup idea. And the idea really came to me. Well, actually, my husband made the deal with me. He's like, I'm totally supportive of you leaving, and you just have to take 3 months, like 3 months off, like do whatever you want to do. And so I was like, okay. And then like 3 weeks later, I was like, I know what I have to do. So it came out of like, I had coffee with a bunch of people after I left. And one of the things I heard from a lot of people is if leaders like you leave corporate America, then like what happens to corporate America? And I sort of like would challenge that with like, but like I can actually do more here, like sort of on the outside looking in than I can do, because I could only really affect the culture of my team. And Nike's so big. And so I'm like, and then I said that enough times and I was like, that's what I have to do. I have to help leaders from the outside because it's safe and they'll actually tell me their fears. Or I have clients who are like, oh my God, I am like a senior leader and I should know how to do this, but I don't even know how to do this. Or I don't even know where to start. And so it kind of came from the conversations where I sort of created the company, like, you know, by talking to people in a coffee shop.
I love that. I learned in sales, as a salesperson, you need to be the best salesperson, but you can only sell so many accounts per day, right? You can only talk to so many people. So then you want to experience growth, and then you move to a manager, but you have those same limitations, right? I could only manage so many sales reps or whatever in that organization. But once you hit that third tier and you go from I'm managing managers or I'm creating managers, then it really, then it's infinite, right? Because now I just need to hire better managers to hire that, then they can, you know, oversee more managers. But I love that's exactly where you're going, because you can make such a big, a larger difference outside rather than just your one team. So, I mean, what is betterment though? Is it, it's a software play, then you can experiment or dive in on exactly how that helps companies.
Yeah, so it started with, you know, individual clients and sort of like executive coaching, career coaching, leadership development, sort of creating a safe environment for people. And I mean, I, over my time as sort of a leader, but also sort of this is a passion area for me. So find a leadership book I haven't read. And so developed a bunch of sort of toolkits. So like one space would be like feedback. People are really uncomfortable with feedback. It's all about reframing feedback to thinking about yourself like a coach, right? And imagine all the people coming into practice every week and you're sitting on the sidelines not telling them. And then you sort of go to the game and you lose the game. And then sort of everybody shows up to practice. What's going to stop is people showing up to practice, right? And so it's actually your duty to say something. It's your duty to sort of give people these little sort of performance enhancing tidbits and pieces of feedback so that they can perform better in the game. And it becomes this like sort of upward cycle instead of this doomsday thing that everybody says in their head, which is like, I don't want to hurt their feelings. And so it's little things like that. So a lot of what we do is sort of just reframe and give people the confidence to sort of tackle the things that might be holding them back. Or sort of, you know, I have a CEO client that I was actually just chatting to before this. And for him, he wants to help everybody so much that he actually does everybody's work for. And so then he hires all these really high performers and they don't really want to, they're not super engaged. And then they leave because he's doing everybody's job. But in his mind, he's like, they're all so busy. They're all so overworked. I'm super passionate about the mission of the company. I don't mind doing the work. But he doesn't understand sort of the inverse of that. So then you sort of reframe and put them in the other shoes. And it's like, oh, yeah, I wouldn't want to work for me either. And so then sort of like building. So it's a combination of sort of a support network and system for clients. So a lot of coaches do like a one-on-one like sort of session. And for me, it's more like a membership. And so it's kind of like when you need us, when you, however you need us, sort of like to basically like help people sort of reach their goals and dreams. But then it started there and then sort of got pulled into those people's companies. So it's like, wow, you've really helped me, like come help my company. And so then it's sort of getting in with companies and thinking about like the culture and the morale and how we sort of create norms and things at the company level that can sort of like have a bigger halo for positivity. And again, back to that, make work suck less. Or not suck at all so that we can sort of help the company. And then it sort of has become, I'm super passionate about small business, which is sort of ironic coming from like two of the largest businesses. But like I, similar to what you guys sort of think and like the guests that you have on your podcast, I'm super passionate about breaking down the barriers for people to sort of, you know, have their own business. And if you look at everything from the American dream to the American tax code, it's all like benefiting people who have businesses. And so it's sort of like distributing the power a little bit. So now sort of, you know, have been pulled into many small businesses and startups and to basically help them be better, better organized, better run, sort of more confidence, more open dialogue. And so it's kind of less, definitely not sort of in the technology space, but sort of like more this evolution of kind of, you know, what everybody wishes consultants were, which is like really on the same page and sort of really on the field and like less creating the fancy decks and more like actually sort of sitting in the room, like feeling like just as much a part of the company. And so that's what we can do. It's sort of, you know, ever evolving and companies keep wanting to pull us sort of like deeper in. So at some point in time, it sort of feels like, do I work here or do I network here? But sort of I'm all in and just want to see people and sort of these organizations be successful.
How big is the Betterment team now? I mean, you're going to have to draw pretty quick.
Yeah. So super exciting. So again, another sort of similarity we have is I'm also a real estate investor. And so I have a business partner on the real estate side, and she and I work really well. And so like have pulled her in now sort of full time into Betterment. And so, yeah, growing for sure. Adding sort of, you know, more programs and things like that to help companies, and also like creating more access, because we can only have so much capacity, especially like right now as we're sort of building and scaling. And so sort of more access for people is sort of one of the things that's on our radar. But yeah, it's been a ton of fun, like having a huge impact on people's lives and making them feel like they're not an imposter. And they deserve to be where they are. And then sort of creating companies that propagate good is like incredibly meaningful.
I think that's like such a key point, because I think so much of us high performers feel like imposters at any given point. And I think you hit it when you're talking about the CEO. It's like, what causes someone to look at themselves in a way where they can actually have change? It wasn't for me. Like, I didn't start changing my behavior. So I started taking a really hard look at who I was as a husband, as a partner, as a business leader. And I'm curious, like, what you instill or what you do to create that trust with someone to actually go down that path.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I've always been a self-help junkie, and I'm the daughter of a single mother who's a therapist. So that's like important context. My entire life, I've either been in therapy or a therapy project. So the self-awareness was not sort of like born with me. I think it was sort of, you know, earned and developed over time. But part of that is like, it's about mirroring. So if I show up to the conversation, I'm like, hey, like, here's what I'm working on. Here's what I'm good at. Here's what I'm not good at. And even when I talk to clients, I'm like, hey, I don't think you'd be the right client because here's what I'm good at and here's what I'm not good at. And then I think people are like, wow, like, I don't even know you. And you just sort of like outed yourself. Like, very few people like wear it on a shirt. Like, I'm not really good at this. And I think once you do, then you sort of invite people to the table to sort of be like, oh yeah, I'm not really good at that either. Or like, it just sort of becomes safe. The example I always use is the baseball card, right? Like, think about like the stats on a baseball card. Like, it's like you're either right-handed or left-handed. It doesn't make you a bad or good baseball player. It's just like a good thing to know, right? And you're either like the starting pitcher or you're the closing pitcher or you're number 42 or you're number 5. Like, it's just sort of, it is what it is. And I think about like starting to like make who we are as people just a little bit more like a baseball card. Like, I'm really good at big ideas, vision, like sort of like exciting a room around, sort of galvanizing around an idea. I'm really bad at taking the first step, right? And so it's like, don't put me in a position where I'm like running the first step to the second step. Put me in the position where I'm like coming up with 10 steps from now. So if I wear that, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, maybe there's a lag there. If you're separating the, this is what I'm good at and what I'm not, and the value that I have as a person, right? Because your comment of left hand, right hand, it just is what it is. I'm good at this. I'm bad at this. That doesn't define if I'm a good person or a bad person, if I have self-worth or not. It's just, it is what it is. And I'm very much the same way, like showing up to a meeting, it's like, here's the good, here's the bad, or like a sales presentation, because that's my background, like starting with the, these are the bad things about solar, right? People are like, wait, why would you tell me the bad things about solar? And it's like, because one, they're true. And two, in a roundabout way, I mean, I'm gaining your trust by being honest with you. And I think that's exactly what you've been experiencing. You're like, I'm not good at that. And they're like, okay, she's not going to bullshit me. So, right. You know, she's going to be honest.
Right. And you see how the imposter thing gets created and then sort of gets propagated, because it's like, well, I'm the leader. Like, I had people 4 levels deep in my organization. Like, I'm somebody's boss's boss's boss, right? Like, and so like, there's this importance that people put on that. And then it's like, okay, well, now I really hope people don't figure me out, right? And so then I now overexert how much I know about everything. And then everybody else is like, well, she's full of shit, right? Because it's like pretty obvious whether you know what you're talking about or not, especially in that room of smart people. So it's like, let's all just like sort of get away from this, like being somebody's boss's boss's boss is me sort of being any more important than anybody else in that room. And let's get back to, what do we want to get done and how can we get it done most effectively? And that means stopping pretending we know everything and starting to out ourselves a little bit more and then like listening. And I think the first person I always hired was the one who would organize and structure things, because I could be effective if I had a right hand. If I didn't listen to that person, or I didn't hire that person, I was too proud to pretend I needed that person, then there's no way I would have experienced the success that I've experienced. And so helping people understand that, like, by sort of like, first of all, we all just have to agree that, like, nobody knows everything. Everybody's figuring out whether you've been a CEO for 45 years or 1 year, like, you're still learning every day. You don't know all the answers. And so we expect that we're the only people that are figuring out and everybody else has it figured out. We have to sort of like get rid of that mindset and realize we're all figuring it out. And God, wouldn't it be so awesome if we could put honesty on the table and bring safety into the room and sort of actually figure it out instead of sort of, you know, duking around with egos and arrogance and sort of being a little bit too precious.
I'm all in for that. That would be amazing.
And a better world, right?
Yeah.
And the type of culture that can be fostered from it. I mean, especially if it's led from the top, that vulnerability, you can't put a price on it. Have you even been able to calculate what organizations, like what revenue could look like if they were to start practicing this and actually implement a lot of the tools that you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, and it's amazing to see how surprised people get. And what I mean by that is, when you sort of do this work and you sort of change the culture of the company, there's people that get so surprised by the potential that was there in the first place that was just not being utilized. And that's been like the sort of the most common sort of, whether it's across big companies, small companies, for-profits, nonprofits, is people are like, there's people that just shine that had been there all along, kind of like in some cases, you know, languishing or sort of not, but like just everything from churn to, you can't hire people these days sort of and fill positions quick enough. And there's a lot of talent out there, but finding the right people and sort of the right fit. And I read a stat that's like $50 billion is wasted in sort of the culture of toxic sort of promotion, which is these people that are really good, you know, sort of benefit from your sales background. They deliver a lot, but like, you know, sort of, it's really hard to like fire your top producing salesperson. But like time and time again, you'll find if those people are toxic for the environment, they are well worth the firing. And before you fire them, coach them, right? And like see if they can get on board, but also like acknowledge that it's okay to be coached and it's okay to have to learn and grow. Because it creates, it's not remedial then. It's like, well, we have an issue and let's sort of deal with it. And we got to create more safety in the workplace. And there's one of two ways that that person reacts, which is, no, it's not a me problem. In which case, then they got to go. And if it's like a, whoa, I had no idea, which is 90% of the time. Oh my God, if I would have known that I was creating misery, or if I would have known that people were sort of feeling unsafe as a result of that, I never would have done it. And those people usually can turn around and then you see the culture. Like it raises all chips. So there is, like, again, it's a really high ROI to investing in your people and culture. And you hear this. I mean, this is like in the news all over everywhere, which is, but the companies that are not getting it, they're hearing it, but they're not getting it, are the ones that are like, great, here's some trainings.
Yeah.
Right? Like the last thing they all need is another Zoom training.
And I imagine a lot of that, it's hard to do at scale. Like talking about a Target or a Nike, you know, like, oh, I have a few leaders here that I can personally coach or hire somebody to coach them. I imagine that gets infinitely harder as you scale from a few hundred employees to a few thousand to tens of thousands. How have you seen, I mean, just are being with Target and Nike, what are they doing in the mental health space? What's good, what's bad, what would change?
Yeah, and that's where, like, I think there's a lot of good stuff, but then I think there's a lot of box checking. Right. Which is like, okay, we got everybody access to the Calm app. Like, you know, we have a meditation club, sort of like check. But again, as a large company, sometimes that's what you can do to start it. And then you have to have like sort of leaders that are really actually sort of, you know, driving the mass of the workforce to like sort of propagate the good and sort of like drive reinforcement behavior over those things. But it's when you have a company as big as Nike or as big as Target, you get these microcultures. So you get teams that, you know, my husband works at Nike too. And it was like during the pandemic, like my area, I mean, I was working way too much. Right. And we had the ton of pressure because I was on the sort of operations side of the house and he's in product. And like the messages from our leadership was drastically different. The sort of expectation, I mean, he would get videos like, you know, take Friday off, like be with your family. And I would get videos like, I don't need it Friday night. I need it Saturday morning, you know? And so it's like you can be in like the same company, but like it's so big that you can have those places. But like I always prided myself on being somebody that people wanted to work for. And so I could change the message that was coming in to me to the message that I would translate to my organization. It's harder for me in that role to translate a different message up. And so you get these sort of microcultures of people sort of who prioritize mental health. Or, I mean, I remember we had fire pit nights at my house when nobody was going into each other's houses. And there were so many people that lived alone, that lived far from family. There's people that were scared. Anxiety was sort of an all-time high, especially during periods of COVID where nobody really knew what it was. And so it was like, okay, well, I think we can all be good if we're outside by our fire pit, wear a mask if you want. But just to like create a sense of community. And that was definitely not in the playbook, right? It was not like, hey, leaders of Nike, like please host fire pit nights and have people over for outdoor dinners. And, you know, but it's sort of like every leader sort of can interpret what their team needs. So there's some teams that didn't need that because maybe they all had partners at home and they were like, all I need is some alone time. I don't want to come to your fire pit. I want to sit at mine alone. And some people needed that. And so that's a lot about that empathy and that EQ, for a leader is like, if we can sort of, raise that up at companies like the Nikes and the Target to be like, this is who we promote is the people who get it and understand what the people need. And then listening to the people, and maybe it's a call map, right? Or maybe it's a different work schedule, or maybe it's, sort of more flexibility about where they work and when they work. But sort of listening to that team, and it might not be the same result as the other teams.
Totally. Do you believe everyone has the potential to be a leader? And what does that look like?
Yeah. So I think everybody has the potential as long as they are willing to do the work. And it's sort of like any good relationship requires work. So you'll hear that about a marriage, right? And you'll hear that about parenting. And it's like, to do it, it requires work. And it's not like I went to this one leadership training and I got a certificate, and so therefore I am a leader. It's like continuing to like show up and put in the work. And so if you're willing to show up and put in the work, then yes. If you're willing to be humble enough to say, I don't know, will you repeat that? Will you help me? Even though I'm your boss's boss's boss, like, please show me that thing. Then yes. And then it's just a matter of style. And I think what goes wrong with leadership is people will have a leader that they look up to and they'll be like trying to sort of do what they do. But then it actually can create more imposter syndrome because say that leader is very gregarious and super inspiring. And maybe that's just not this person's style. Then they just sort of like always feel like they're not a good leader because they're not looking like that leader. And really, it's about finding your better leader, like finding your better version and not trying to become somebody else, but being the better version of you. So maybe you're the kind of leader who like doesn't say a lot in the room and then you make one statement at the end and it's like a mic drop, super profound, you know, statement. And it's like, okay, well, I couldn't do that. I'm the one that's sort of like yabbing throughout the whole thing. But like the sort of like, I love that, but that's never going to be me. That's never going to be my leadership style. And so part of it is embracing who you are and like becoming the better version of you. Instead of trying to be this person, like trying to be Brene Brown or trying to be this person that you sort of see and admire.
No, I think that's true. And I don't think there's anything wrong. We can be the best players, but it comes down to leadership and showing up and putting the work in to really make the right teams click and the right environment happen. And like you said, it comes with doing the work. Because the question is out there is, are we born with it? And yeah. I think that's the million-dollar question that everybody's still trying to answer. But
I think it's silly.
Yeah.
Anything that requires formal education, it's, we know that you're not born a doctor. Nobody's born a lawyer. Nobody's born a neuroscientist. But maybe you are born a leader of a huge kind. It's like, well, no, you know, you still have to do the work. It's just, you'd have to go to college. You were born a salesperson. Like, well, no, like, you have to... Everything requires learning and time, and the more learning and time you put in, accelerate. But anyways, recruiting salespeople, I'd always say, oh, I'm just not a born salesperson. Who's a born salesperson? Somebody likes talking, you know? Like a lot of salespeople, people like myself, like I was pretty introverted, you know? But I'm like, well, I'm just going to memorize the freaking sales script, memorize every rebuttal, and practice it in the mirror. Like, well, I don't think I was born that way.
And like, so everybody likes rejection.
No. I mean, and the leadership, it's like, oh, you're born a leader. It's like, well, no, I put myself out there and I failed enough times to, you know, I mean, like what you did quitting that corporate job, like that's crazy. And you would have, nobody would have said you're born a leader unless you took that action first.
Right. Well, I always say good leaders are born, better leaders are made. Right. Because it's like, you can have a natural disposition to be somebody that people follow, right? Like I see it with my kids, right? One of them can get everybody in a room like playing the game that she wants, and one of them sort of in the corner being told what to do by other people, right? And but it doesn't mean that one's going to be a better leader than the other, but it's that's that it's sort of like, again, the thing too is like we have a very extroverted orientation toward leadership, right? Where it's like we think that the person who can, you know, say the most and sort of shout the loudest and be up on stage and be like charismatic and gregarious is the definition of a leader. But really, honestly, if you look at a lot of companies, they're being led by people who are sitting in the corner drawing and they're listening and they're much more introverted and they're not gregarious. And in fact, they probably get really nervous every time they go to speak. But so we have to sort of also change that definition of like what a leader looks like, because there are many different types of leaders, and we shouldn't sort of make the people who are more introverted feel like to be a leader, you have to be extroverted, or the people, you know, on the reverse. And so it's just about sort of that, knowing that you have to grow into yourself as a leader. So exactly what you said, Bennett, I couldn't agree with more, which is why we have to put in the work.
How has it been now, but you're on this entrepreneurship journey for the last year and a half, balancing work, marriage, kids? How difficult or easy has that been for you?
Yeah, it's interesting. I catch up with people all the time and they're like, God, you have all these things. And I'm like, I know, but they're all productive, right? So I don't waste time anymore. And I can't tell you how much time used to get wasted just about sort of preciousness around egos and bureaucracy and things like that. And it's not just Nike, it's big companies, right? You got to influence a bunch of people to move something forward. Now I just decided we go. And so it is, I've never been more present with my children, with my family, sort of like more engaged in my life. I've never been sort of better at saying no to stuff, because it sort of always felt like when I'm sort of part of this company, like the stuff that flowed to me was sort of my responsibility. Now I'm like, not the right client, not the right time, not the right thing. Like sort of, you know, I have no shame saying no. And so, yeah, I just feel like I honestly can't believe I lasted so long in corporate, because I'm such a more natural entrepreneur. But if I look back at my jobs, I was always either a fixer or a builder. Uh-huh. So sort of I had a 10-year entrepreneurial career at Nike. I just had a really large cash balance to pull from. So it's like I was the first person to start this function. I was the first person to start that function. I turned around this function. So it was sort of like if you look at my background, and I always joke because people, my mentors, sort of the whole time that I was at Nike, would say, you're going to get stuck. Because I was the kind of person where it was like, you know, I started in strategy and then I moved to merchandising, I started pricing, I moved to sustainability, I started sustainable material function, then I moved to operations to sort of like basically do a tech, a digital transformation. And people are, you're going to get stuck because as you move up the corporate ladder, you have to like specialize. And I'm like, I feel really specialized because I'm specializing at fixing stuff.
Love it.
Right? I'm specializing at taking the jobs that like everybody's like, yeah, that won't work. And I'm like, I want it. I'll do it. I'll make it work. And so I was like, no, that's actually a skill set. And I realized that was an entrepreneur skill set. So it was like, in theory, like what doesn't sort of look like the normal path in corporate America, because I didn't like just move up the ladder in a function, sort of was a really great training ground for now what I'm doing.
Love it. The entrepreneur, you know, you're an entrepreneur inside of somebody else's business.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So that's
good place to start. Deep pockets, right?
Yeah, you get experience and kind of cut your teeth and like, what do I like, what do I not like, without burning through your own capital.
For sure.
I guess to that like question is like how, because leaders have to speak up. They have to find their voice. And part of that, whether you're an entrepreneur or finding yourself as a leader and solving problems, what would you give as advice to help people find their voice and be able to take that first step?
Yeah. And this is where sort of the sort of therapist Sarah comes out, which is like, it's first about finding yourself. And once you sort of build that awareness, it's about accepting yourself. So it's back to this, people always have this vision of what they should look like. And it can be like the picture with the abs that you can see and you're like, this is so motivating to me, you know, but it's also like, it can also be discouraging because it's like, you know, maybe it's really not who you are. Maybe it's this like sort of idea of who you've been told you should be. Like a lot of us have this idea of who we need to be because our parents or society or our partners sort of has told us that. So it's really about figuring out who you are and accepting who you are and then aspiring to be the better version of yourself. And it's not what other people want for you. It's about what you want for you. And once you do that work, and again, this is like been the work of my whole life. And so when I got into the sort of corporate world, I didn't realize that not everybody was raised by a mother who was a social worker. And not everybody did Enneagram as a family, right? And not everybody sort of had this awareness being built their whole life. And so then I sort of would try to fast track it with my teams. And it's like, how do we all, so just like put it all on the table and get really aware, really accepting, because that's how you can start to like combat that imposter. And once you can do that, then you find your voice. And so I was always the one, and I'm not even kidding you, I was the one that like people would send me messages on Slack when we were in meetings because they knew that I would be the first person to speak up against management. So it'd be like, see this, like more of this, yeah, go. And I'm like, I'm saying something, I'm like, this doesn't make sense. This timing doesn't make sense. Like we have to prioritize, our teams are underwater. And I'm like advocating and I'm getting like the, yeah, go Sarah. And I'm like, okay, first of all, like, you guys should jump in here. Yeah. But second of all, if I have to die on this mountain, I'll die on this mountain because that's about like, it's my, then I go home at night and I'm like, I feel like I'm doing what I can. And it might not feel always like I'm cutting through, but I'm doing what I can. And if that person needs pushback, I'm the first person to give it, not because I like conflict and confrontation, but because it had to be said. And that's where, but it's like all that work to be like, I'm confident with who I am. And I know I'm not good at everything, right? But the accepting that I'm not good at everything and then knowing that I'm good at advocating for people and I know when something doesn't smell right. And so I will be the first person to speak up, which isn't always comfortable, but it's kind of like who I gotta be.
Yeah, I love that. It's not comfortable with you. It's who you need to be. And then other people, I mean, that's leadership, right? And then other people are seeing who you are and how you are doing that. And anyway, so that's awesome. Taking those big risks. So Sarah, I really appreciate you coming on the show today. It was awesome getting to know you.
Thanks for
being a digital guest to help us work out some things. Before we end, where can our listeners follow you and connect with you, Sarah?
Yeah, so Sarah Walton on LinkedIn or Betterment. So BETTERMEANT. And betterment.co is our website. Yeah.
Awesome. Been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. Thank you so much.